Welcome to Coming From Experience, my virtual campfire where we can all gather round and share our experiences through this little thing called life. I'm your host, Annalise, and I'm here to bring you the raddest people I've come to know, sharing their stories of growth, evolution, and their unique take on universal experiences. The stories and experiences I bring to you in this podcast will span a wide variety of topics, from career changes to motherhood, personal development, spirituality, growth in relationship, health and wellness, and so much more. I hope that these stories inspire you and open up a portal for deep connection and conversation on topics that would otherwise be left untouched. Let's dive in. Finding what you had in mind. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by Hannah Dawson, who is a movement teacher, and she really draws in a lot of her past experiences into her movement practice. Hannah was trained as a dancer and has seen her movement practice evolve over the last decade, I'd say, as she's evolved as an individual as well. So a lot of the conversation that we have today is around movement. Hannah has this beautiful approach to movement in that it's one of childlike play and really for wellness, not for punishment, really here to nourish the body, draw connection back into the body and create that connection with the self. And it really does serve as such a beautiful, expansive opportunity to do that. We also have a pretty awesome chat towards the end about veganism, and Hannah drops some absolute truth bombs around animal rights and why these factors really influenced her choice in going down the path of veganism as well. And I really hope you guys stick around until the end to hear all of that. So I really hope you enjoy today's episode. It's a really chill one. Hannah is such a grounded, beautiful human being. She's so softly spoken. It's just so calming to my soul. So I hope you got something amazing out of, I hope you get something amazing out of this conversation today. And I can't wait to hear what you think. Welcome, Hannah, to the podcast. I'm so stoked to have you here.
Thanks, Annalise. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh. We go way back. So Hannah and I work together in a studio in Melbourne called The A-Life, and you are a majestic movement coach. Is that how best to describe you? I always wonder.
Would call myself, a movement teacher rather than a specific style. Yeah,
I love that. I love that about you. And to kick off, I really want to ask you how you spend your day so people can get a real feel for who you are as a person and how you kind of integrate your work and play into your whole life.
I guess I'll go with pre-COVID, how I would spend it. Because it's a little bit different now. I guess generally I'd spend my days either teaching classes, generally group classes or some one-on-one, kind of combination of yoga, Pilates, gymnastics. And I like to go to classes as well for my own learning. I like going to like dance and yoga classes and that kind of thing. I also like to do my own practice throughout the day. I love going for walks and getting into nature. I grew up in a pretty much surrounded by nature, so it's kind of something that I do to sort of feel at home. I love drinking chai.
Me too.
I like getting crafty, so I like sewing or making things, and that's kind of roughly how I spend my days, I think.
Sounds like a bloody good day to me. You kind of touched on something really interesting there about your approach to movement. And I love that you define yourself as a movement teacher. And I guess the way that we met was when you were teaching yoga specifically. And I know there's been quite a journey there for you in terms of creating and formulating your own movement style and your own way of teaching movement. And I'd love to hear how you got to that place, because you have a history in dance. There's been a whole big journey that's happened that's got you to where you are today, and I'd love for you to share whatever feels relevant from that.
Yeah, sure. So I started my movement practice probably before I was born, really. My mum would always say that I was just such an active baby inside her belly, and I was born with my umbilical cord wrapped around my neck. Like, I was always just really physical. Yeah, so lucky that went well. yeah, even, you know, I started walking like before I turned one. Like, I was always really active, and I just loved climbing things and loved, you know, every opportunity I got to climb something or play or, you know, do some like roly polies, like I'd always be there. so, yeah, so that's kind of why my parents put me into ballet class. I also had an obsession with Sailor Moon, so that was kind of like filling that void of being a princess warrior and moving at the same time. And, yeah, so they just put me into ballet classes, and later on I started doing gymnastics and other dance styles as well. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in New Zealand, and my mum is Japanese. I was born in Japan and grew up in New Zealand. My dad is a New Zealander from Irish and Welsh heritage. And I grew up in a small town in New Zealand, and I never really felt like I fitted in as a kid, because I was kind of the only sort of Asian person in my school.
And yeah, right.
I didn't know any other Asian kids. And yeah, and like, I'd get bullied a lot at school and just called names. And I always felt like a bit of an outsider.
Kids are shit.
Yeah, I know. It's horrible.
So shit. Yeah.
Like, things that kids would say to me, like if someone said that to an adult now, they would get like sued, and they would, yeah. Anyway. So yeah. And then whenever I went into, say, ballet or gymnastics class, like, it was just time where I could not really be in my head. I could just focus on what I'm doing with my body. So thinking about, you know, straightening my leg, I'm thinking about doing this movement with that timing of the music, or I'm thinking about, I don't know, doing a handstand or whatever. So it was just like I almost got into like a bit of a trance when I was so I was almost like in a bit of a trance when I, as a kid, doing all these physical practices. And now that I think about it, it was, I guess, really just that flow state or mindfulness practice that I found, luckily. And it was a bit of an escape as well from, like, stuff that was going on and, like, you know, feeling like a outsider and that kind of thing. Yeah, so that's kind of where it started. And I kept doing ballet and gymnastics right up until high school. So I did some, like, competitive gymnastics. And like traveled around New Zealand a little bit. And I did ballet about 21. So, so after high school, I moved to Melbourne, to a full-time dance school. And yeah, so that's where I kind of improved and took my dance skills, to a higher level. And, you know, during dance school, it was pretty toxic. Like, there was a lot of people with eating disorders, and, you know, there was a huge emphasis on looking a certain way. And like, teachers always telling me to lose weight and
awful. And it's, yeah. And I mean, I know you, and you have, like, you have such a healthy, strong body. Like, and I think it's so damaging with people, especially in that, like, realm, try and say that you need to just be like thin. And I don't know, I just feel like part of the beauty of dance is the strength that the dancers have.
And I mean, I've always had, I guess it's my gymnastics background, like, I've always had quite a strong body. And so I've never had, like, I've never been like a skinny kid. Like, I was I always, like, you know,
muscle strength.
As a kid, I was so embarrassed of my muscles as well. Like, I was so like, oh, I'm this mixed raced and like muscly kid. Like, and I could look at myself and be like, oh, why can't I just be like a skinny white girl with blonde hair and blue eyes? Which is such a horrible thing for a kid to go through.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, after my dance training, I went on to work professionally as a dancer. So I did that for a couple of years. I didn't have any like huge contract jobs. Like I didn't like work on a musical or anything like that. But I had a few like companies in Melbourne that I worked with and performed with regularly. And yeah, so I'm actually quite proud that I had work as a dancer. Like a lot of, not really common knowledge, but a lot of dancers never actually work because there's just, yeah, there's just so much competition and yeah, so I did work a little bit as a performer, and that was kind of around the time where I started going to yoga classes and Pilates and that kind of thing. And yeah, the aim for going into yoga classes was always for like weight loss and changing the way,
right?
Because of all that stuff that I got at dance school about, like, I'll never get a job if I don't lose weight, or if you know, saying like no one wants to look at your thunder thighs and like that kind of crap that they'll say. Like it was really horrible.
Assholes.
So that's when I kind of discovered yoga and more of like movement for wellness. And I guess it kind of, I did like a whole circle of, you know, going through dance school, and I even like developed a bit of like some eating issues and that kind of thing, and going through a bit of struggle with my body and how I was approaching movement from a different aspect. And then I just kind of full circle going back to finding movement in my day for enjoyment and to kind of go into that flow state and go into that weird trance thing again.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I've really moved now for enjoyment and play.
I love that. Yeah. That is so important. I feel like that is so lost on people. I feel like movement and exercise is like burn calories, like lose weight, punish your body instead of nurture, nourish, reinvigorate, you know. There's so much more depth to movement.
For sure.
And so today you teach in a really unique way, which is what I really love about you. And I've been lucky enough to witness your evolution, I guess, over the last few years. And I guess there's been this sort of, I don't know, would you agree with me in that there was a bit of a realization where you were like, I teach yoga, but I'm not just yoga. And then you kind of branched away from that a little bit.
So this is something that I've always really thought about, like ever since I did my yoga training, and like I've never really thought of myself as a yogi or like a yoga teacher, but obviously if I'm working at a yoga studio, I have to teach yoga. So it's not like I completely branch off and just do my own thing. I kind of have to fit myself into like, the studio wants power yoga, so I guess I'll just teach that. And
yeah.
And like, don't get me wrong, I love yoga. Like yoga's amazing, and the philosophy of yoga really changed the way that I see my body and how I want to like live and how I want to, you know, help people, and even little things like reduce my waste to help the planet, and like all that sort of stuff stemmed from discovering yoga philosophy and thinking about like my impact on other people and that kind of thing. I love yoga, the yoga practice in general, but there are a few issues that I have as well with how yoga is being presented at the moment. And before I kind of go into it, I just kind of want to say that this is just my experience. And
of course,
people who disagree with what I'm about to say.
And that's fine. That's just life. Yeah, and you're entitled to your experience.
My view of the yoga practice is that yoga is such an ancient practice, and it's dated, you know, 5,000 plus years old. And it's so connected with Hinduism and Buddhism and Jainism and Indian culture in general. It's so kind of intertwined, and some of the texts that, like the yogic texts, are kind of integrated with Buddhism and Hinduism. If I do like a 200-hour training and then a 300-hour training in yoga, can I really call myself a teacher of this practice. I don't know. It never really sat well with me calling myself a yoga teacher when I'm just teaching the physical aspects, really, and a sprinkle bit of mindfulness. Like, I'm not really teaching yoga as a whole. So for me, it's like showing respect for what yoga is. I don't want to call myself a yoga teacher or call my classes yoga, because what we practice in studios now is so far away from what yoga used to be. Like, it's heritage, and I'm thinking, like, is this, I don't know, it just doesn't really feel right for me to teach that. And it's someone else's culture as well. Like, it's so ingrained in Indian, and I'm not Indian. So do I have a right to teach that as well? Like, I don't know. Like, it's just a bit of a gray, weird area for me. And so that's kind of why I've stemmed away from yoga.
I remember when you shared of that on your socials, and I remember thinking, like, I totally get it. Like, it's this big overarching thing with yoga. Like, it's not just the movement. And I know sometimes I would stop myself from going to a yoga practice or a class because I knew I wasn't the full integration, the full embodiment of it. I just knew I liked, you know, the yin classes, for example, when I needed to stretch. And there is this sort of imposter syndrome-y stuff that goes on when you go and you practice. And I know that there are people out there, like you said, that are devoted and probably have it show up in every, you know, inch of their being, and from a student's perspective as much as a teacher's perspective. But I think there can be limitations in that when we become so focused in on one specific thing as well. And I've really seen in your work, it's kind of branched out and you've been able to draw more of your own experiences into your teaching.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, my training is, like, yoga's just a small part of my physical training. And, yeah, so I found it quite limiting as well to say that I'm teaching a yoga class, because then I can't really teach all the other things that I love about movement and gymnastics and just all of the other things. So that is another reason as well. I felt like it was... And yeah, almost like I was a fraud calling my classes yoga, because I know that they're not really yoga either.
Yeah, like, right.
I think a couple years ago now, I decided, like, I'm not going to use I'm going to try not to use Sanskrit words in my classes, because I was never taught Sanskrit by a Sanskrit scholar or anyone who, you know, knows a lot about Sanskrit. Like, most of the yoga teachers that I've had were, like, Caucasian people. And how do I know if they're pronouncing the words correctly, or so I kind of decided for a while that I wanted to stem away from it out of respect for the practice, though, not because I completely love the yoga practice and yoga philosophy and all of that, and I just think that what I do isn't an accurate representation of what yoga is as a whole.
So what do you think is a kind of accurate representation of what you do and how you teach? I'd love for you to share on that.
So I guess my classes are a combination of, I guess, so my main focus is moving to feel good and moving to connect with your body and connect with yourself. So, and I think that movement is a way to come back to your nature, or a way to kind of do what our bodies were made for. And that these days, you know, so many people are working at desks, always really still, and they're just always using their brains. Their bodies are just, you know, a machine that kind of carries their brain from place to place, and then they don't really know what to do with it almost. And, like, if something goes wrong, say they have a sore shoulder, they'll see a specialist. Like, they don't have the intuitive mind to think, oh, maybe I can fix it, or maybe I can da da da. And give people the freedom to get to know their bodies a bit better and help heal themselves, I guess.
Through that connection, through that knowing, through that awareness of the body.
Yeah. Because I think the more you know yourself, the more, like, the more you know your physical body and the more you know what works and what doesn't work for you, the happier and healthier your body's going to feel.
Yeah.
Because, like, you go to a class and it could be all about, I don't know, yeah, I mean, the teacher might have a specific idea of what they want you to do, but that might not necessarily fit what you need to do for your body. So it's my aim with this practice and with teaching is to guide people in a way that they can feel good from within and, yeah, move with a bit of, like, creativity and playfulness as well.
And play is a huge part of your practice, isn't it, in how you – like, you have a class that is it called Play or?
It's called Move and Play, yeah.
Move and Play, yeah. So yeah. I love that. Like, it's almost childlike and there's freedom in that.
Well, that's kind of the practice. Like, some people just take it so seriously, but doing your, like, little bunny hops and handstands and that kind of thing, all I think of is just, you know, when you're a kid and you just throw yourself everywhere and you – like, kids are always doing, like, cartwheels and roly-polies and all of that stuff. And then all of a sudden we turn into adults and we're too good for that, you know. So, yeah.
We're so upright and rigid.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's, oh, my back hurts, I can't do that. Or there's all these, like, limitations. Like, obviously if you have a serious injury, like, please don't just throw yourself into a cartwheel. But there's little ways that you can just have fun and make it enjoyable, because what's the point in doing something if it's not enjoyable?
I agree. I completely agree. And I feel like I did a post about this the other day where our whole mindset around movement has just, like, completely shifted and evolved. And the origins of movement are in those ancient practices like yoga, where it was really about that mind-body connection, like giving yourself space to lean into that, to think and to feel and to move your body in a different way. I've done a bunch of classes with you where, like, at first it can seem a little bit odd. Like, we've done, like, foot exercises and releasing our feet and, like, rolling a ball, and you're doing it and you're like, okay. And then you take it away and you're like, I have a whole fucking new foot, like, from doing this little stretch. Yeah. Like, and and think that your feet and your fingers and, like, your forearms and these, like, parts of your bodies that you neglect need stretching and need nurturing, and you need to look after them, and they're all feeding into one another as well.
That's awesome.
But don't you think, like, people often just focus on, like, glutes and abs, and, like, yeah, you can miss the point of, like, this is health and wellness. It's not just the aesthetics behind it and working towards that.
Like, what's the point in, you know, working out your glutes and, I don't know, I just don't see a long-term benefit of that. Like, great, you have a nice bum, then what? Like, that's so boring. Like, why would you want to just spend all your days trying to sculpt your body, or, like, in a punishing way, you know? Like, the mentality is, you know, work hard and, like, oh, I destroyed my abs today. Oh, that's great. Like, why is that great?
I know. It's like the last thing I think of doing.
Yeah.
Like, for me, if I do movement, it's like you said, like, go for a walk to clear my head, or do a class because I want to be guided back into myself. And I think sometimes that can be really hard to do on your own. And I know, so I'm just going to keep talking about how great your classes are, because you're my favorite. But thank God it's just audio. But, like, you touched on it anyway yourself about that mind body connection, and I feel like there is a lot of that in the work that you do. Like, how do you try and bring that back into your practice, into your teachings with people, whether it's in a class, and I guess we'll come to this, but shifting into an online space as well with your teaching? How do you bring that in?
So how do I bring in mind-body connection?
Like, getting people to tune into that, because it's hard unless someone's prompting you, which you do fabulously.
Thank you. So I guess from my dance background, I think of movement from a creativity aspect as well. So as a dancer, I think of my body as the blank canvas, right? And what I do with my body is the art, I guess. So using a lot of imagery really helps for me. And there is a bit of science on that as well. So for example, if you say to someone, so if you want someone to stretch their arm out, you could say, lift your shoulder, lift your elbow, and then turn your arm up and then straighten your forearm and then straighten your wrist and then stretch your palm, stretch your fingers. And obviously, like, they will do that and they can get there. But instead of say something like, pretend that your arm is an octopus and you're going to stretch your octopus tentacle out. And you kind of do that automatically.
That's so true. You know? And the ladder is so much more fun and interesting.
it's kind of silly, but it actually gives a better quality of movement as well. So if you say to someone something like that, oh, imagine that you're touching a cloud, or imagine that you're doing blah, 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 it actually gets them to do the movement without having to overcomplicate it. So people like to, we're so used to overcomplicating and thinking about every single thing and like micromanaging every single thing in our lives. And now that mentality comes into the body as well. So there's so much like drop your shoulders, squeeze the shoulder blade, blah, 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 blah. Like all stuff happening in yoga class. And like some people really respond to that as well because that's what they're used to and that's what they want, that specificity, because they think that that's going to give them a better result. But really there is some research about, for athletes, if they think about what they're doing with their body, specific parts of the body, they actually have a worse outcome. So if they think, every time I go for, say, if it's, I don't know, I don't have any like sports knowledge, so this is a really good example probably, but like, say if I'm going to catch a ball, which I can't catch for shit, but I'm going to catch a ball and I'm like, you're going to catch a ball, right? You're just going to like grab it. I lift my shoulders and then stretch my arms and then I'm going to bring my hands together at the exact moment to catch a ball. Like, you would never do that. So why would you do a movement class?
That is so true. I've never thought of it like that. And it's very true.
Yeah. So I like to add in some of that imagery. And I think that's a really good way to connect as well with the body, thinking about the quality of the movement. How can I make my arm an octopus tentacle? How can I lift my shoulder? How can I blah, 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 and all that boring stuff.
And like you said, it kind of takes you out of that rigid mindset as well, like even by having that relaxed imagery.
Yeah, and like people love, like I think humans are innately creative, right? Like we're told that we're not creative if we can't do a certain thing well, but our minds love thinking and imagining things, because that kind of is what sets us apart from the animals, like the ability to imagine stories and imagine different like scenarios in your head. So it's so natural to think about that with your body as well.
And what a good way to take yourself out of that unhealthy headiness that we can all get into.
Spend all day thinking about stuff. So just go to movement class and think about like being an octopus or like, I don't know.
Wriggle around.
That childlike play as well.
Yeah, that childlike play, I think we miss out on so much of that. And you're right, where is that turning point? Like, when do we stop being kids that run around and play? And when do we become the people sitting and talking and being boring?
I don't know.
But it just kind of happens like slowly. And then like for me, even thinking about what you've been saying, I'm like, when did that happen? Like, when did I stop just running around and moving my body because I loved it, not because I felt like I needed to sculpt it into something that everyone else was telling me it needed to be?
Yeah, for sure. And I've definitely been there. Like, I've been in that point where like all I did, like my movement practice was just to shed fat and like literally make my body exist in a smaller way, like physically, mentally, spiritually. Like I was just shrinking my whole being. It wasn't about shedding the fat or whatever. It was because I hated my body and I hated myself, right? If you're going to class to lose weight, or if you're going to class to look or change something about yourself. Like, where is that coming from? It's not just about your body. It's about something that you don't like about yourself, and that's kind of coming out in those different things.
What do you think changed for you in terms of your relationship with movement and your body?
Trying to think of a specific time that it happened.
I can appreciate it was probably very gradual, and many, many life experiences kind of all brought that into fruition for you.
Yeah. I guess the thing that kind of started it, I guess, would be delving into more yoga styles of movement. So movement that was more mindful, and also delving into contemporary dance, which is a lot more open and less strict than, say, ballet or that kind of style of dance. So, yeah, so I think it was just finding different types of movement and seeing different types of people.
Yeah.
And
a broader representation of a healthy body, I suppose.
Yeah. And then, like, even so, I went to a few musical theatre auditions, and like the people around me, like, they were, I was like, I don't want to be these people. Like, everyone was in these booty shorts and like tan fishnets with spray tan everywhere and like all this makeup. And I was just like, I hate this. I hate these people. I hate everything about this.
Yeah.
Which sounds horrible. Like, I don't hate anyone, but I just hated what I was becoming around them. Yeah. I hated the part of myself that was coming out when I was in that environment. So I think that was maybe what started it. Just not feeling good about being around that kind of energy and all these other people who had like eating disorders, and it was just so unhealthy. And I just thought, like, there has to be something else. Like, how... You know, like, it's just not sustainable. It's not the way I want to live. It's not, yeah. So that kind of made me want to search for more, I think.
And it was the next thing you found, yoga?
I think yoga and contemporary dance were the two.
Contemporary.
Yeah, so contemporary dance. So I think some people have a bit of a confused idea of what contemporary dance is. So contemporary dance is, I guess, like modern physical theatre and dance. I don't even know how to describe it, to be honest.
To me, I think like hip hop, do whatever you want, not very prescriptive, like just feeling and moving your body in a way to music. That's kind of what I think of when I hear contemporary, right or wrong.
I don't know. Like, it's, So it's kind of like, you know, when you go to, say, a museum or something, and they have like a installation or some sort of movement piece, and then someone's kind of doing this weird shake and like this weird movement that you think, what the hell are they doing? Like, why is this art? Like, why did I pay money to see this person like playing around? That's what contemporary dance is, pretty much.
Yeah, right, okay. So, yeah.
So it's like that.
So far more weird.
Like, is this art, or what am I looking at? I'm not really sure what this is. But it's kind of cool and kind of interesting. But, yeah, so that's kind of what contemporary is. It's like a, I don't know.
Unusual. Creativity that is unexplainable.
To move the body.
Well, I feel like that all kind of slips in really well for you, because it is this almost free way of viewing movement and dance and teaching and practices, and not being confined to a box or a set of rules or a set of teachings, especially if you so beautifully put, seem like they're beyond what is being taught in a classroom as well. So all of that to me just sounds like freedom to do whatever the fuck you want with your body in whatever way feels good.
Life as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I guess how has the pandemic really influenced your business? Because now there is no classroom, because, I mean, you're in Melbourne, so you are really in the thick of it at the moment, whereas the rest of the nation is kind of going back to more in-person movement practices and classes. And I know you guys got a taste of that before going back under lockdown. But how has that influenced your movement practice and teaching and the students, I guess, that you see?
Since the pandemic, so before COVID, I was teaching mostly yoga classes in studio. And yeah, I was teaching at like yoga studios, and the class name was blah blah yoga. So I was always teaching like yoga flow or a yin yoga. And then the pandemic happened and everything closed down, and you know, studios weren't like, they didn't have work for me. So I thought, I guess I'll start my own classes online. I don't know if anyone will show up, but let's just put them up and see what happens. And then when I was thinking what style of classes, like, I automatically thought, oh, I'll just do what people want. I'll give them yoga and like a beginner's yoga and a blah, blah, blah. But then after a while, I was like, actually, this isn't what I want my you know, my own offerings to be about. Like, it's so not me to offer yoga, so why am I putting it out there if I don't truly wholeheartedly believe in it? So I started to just think about different ways to incorporate my other movement styles, and yeah, so now I've kind of come up with a schedule that's little bits of everything. So like the move and play classes is kind of like a yoga flow warm up, and then goes into more sort of gymnastics and play. And then there's a free flow class, which is just, it's pretty much just a dance class. But
that's awesome.
So I haven't called it dance because the word dance freaks people out. So yeah. I've called it free flow. So it's more of like just exploring. And that class is all about finding your own way to move. So it's really, so that like octopus arm thing, like I'll give people that kind of thing and they'll just have a play around with their bodies. And then mellow stretch class, which is the one that you did. And that one was
love that.
Wind down, just really chilled out. Not just yoga stretches. Well, I don't really put much yoga stretches or a sequence or anything. It's just, yeah, just movements that feel really nice for the evening.
I love that because
meditation. So
yes, and then I love your voice in meditation so sweet. But that class is the one where you can like, you'll be like, okay, we're going to stretch out our fingers and like our toes and like get into these nitty gritty parts of your body that you forget about. And I just love that.
Yeah, and that's what I've loved about doing my own classes, because like if I work at a studio, the students go for a workout, right? So I have to give them a workout, or I have to give them a blah blah blah. Whereas with my own classes, I'm like, I don't have to fit in with what the studio wants. I can just give whatever I think people need, and or whatever I think people want or would really benefit from, and offer that instead of just being a workout or just being a certain style or
And I feel like people resonate with that as well and probably feel drawn to you. And I know that people want to do movement in a different way. They don't necessarily want to do it in a way that it's always been taught. Like if I want to do something high intensity, like for me, I'll go for a run. But if I want to move my body in a different way, I'll probably turn to someone like yourself where I can be guided through that and have exposure to that and not feel limited to do things in such a prescribed manner. Stifling for our bodies.
Yeah, sure. That's really, that's cool. And the other reason I put up my own classes is because it's just a lot more accessible. Like, I've always had this thing about teaching in studio where, you know, you can only really get a certain demographic of people going into yoga studios because they are on the more expensive side of activities.
Yep.
I mean, like, if you can go for a run for free, then like, you know, so
sure.
Yeah, and the tricky thing with that is that a lot of studios don't make a lot of money either, so it's, I mean, they have to charge those prices, so it's not like I'm saying that studios are just all the money, because a lot of studios don't, are kind of scraping by, and it's really hard. But in saying that, you know, the prices that they charge isn't super accessible for all people. So like my online classes, it would also be another way to offer something for people who can't necessarily afford to go to a class or can't necessarily carve out the time in their day to leave the house and go to a studio and practice.
It's a real catch-22 because on one side it's like connection and being around other people and getting out of the house, and then on the other side you're like, leave me the hell alone, don't want to go anywhere, can, you know, roll out of bed straight onto the floor and do something. Like it's it serves different people and maybe the same person at different points in time in their life as well to have. But I think having that flexibility and that option is just amazing because it's not something we have had enough of in the past. And I think if anything, the pandemic has really brought that to the forefront, that we can stay connected, that we can keep up with these movement practices or routines or whatever, even from home. And I think we probably all needed to experience that and know that. And even for people that work in businesses where they had to travel, you know, 45 minutes each way to get into an office, when really they can sleep in for an extra 20 minutes and, you know, get up, have breakfast with their family, and then go to a home office and do the exact same work. Like they don't always have to go and be somewhere to do something.
Yeah. Less travel.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Hopefully people will take less business trips after this.
Yeah, I know.
Well, they don't need to fly.
Just have a Zoom meeting.
Yeah. Less glamorous, but be better for the environment than to fly somewhere.
And that is a huge part of who you are as well, isn't it? Like the whole, like a broader holistic take on life in terms of environmental perspectives and things like that. I don't know if you want to touch on that for a little bit, but I do love your whole holistic view on things. Kind of throwing you a curveball here.
My holistic view on things, like obviously I think that as humans we have a duty to look after our planet, right? Humans destroying it, and it's such a hard one because there's, and it really annoys me sometimes because why are people like us feeling the guilt of climate change, and why are we, you know, why do we have to do all the recycling and the blah, 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 when there's actually people in power who can make huge differences and huge changes to completely stop the rise of global warming and that kind of thing. And why is it like, obviously we'll do like I will do everything that I can to reduce my carbon footprint and all of that. But it's so frustrating. Like there's people who, like, sign a paper and then it will, you know, stop, will reduce coal. And be like, oh, it's just really annoying.
And there's always an agenda to it, isn't there? And there's always,
it's all about the bottom line. It's all about what's going to give them money and what's going to give them more power. So, yeah, I mean, I think like most people these days, I do what I can to reduce my impact, and that's mostly why I went vegan, because I knew that, like, that was something easy that I could change to drastically reduce my carbon footprint. And I know it's not for everyone. Yeah, things like that, and just recycling everything that I purchase, reducing my, like, I think last year I went without buying any new clothes. And yeah, just experimenting with that kind of thing. And and the really cool thing about not buying new clothes was, like, it really made me think about what I need. And we don't need a million items of clothing. Like, we don't need to buy new stuff all the time. We can go to the op shop and buy something. Like, it's not like it's, it's such a big topic to jump into.
It is, it is. And on that topic about clothing in particular, I find it, you value what you do buy when you're more conscious about it, right? And you'd be more willing to invest in something that's really high quality, where, you know, people are being, you know, awarded the appropriate wage, I suppose. And I feel like, yeah, as a consequence of just not having that, you know, expendable sort of income to spend, you know, lusciously on clothing from time to time, when you do make a purchase, it's super intentional. You're like, I want this to last. And then, you know, you can be thrifty in other areas too, if you just want to add a bit of flavor to your collection.
Yeah. And
that's something we could do so much more of.
Yeah. And another thing about, like, money psychology, which we've talked about this before, is the more you spend on something, the more you value it. So if you buy, like, a cheap $5 top, you're going to be like, oh, this is just a crappy top, I don't really care, and you'll probably chuck it out. Whereas if you buy, a top that's, I don't know, $50, you'd be like, this is, yeah. So it actually really makes you think about, do I really want this? Is this going to be, do I need this in my life? So, yeah, that's been a good little learning experience for me, I think.
I agree. Same here. Now, you touched on veganism, and again, something that I didn't really prep you for, but you happy to kind of chat about that a little bit? Because I know you've been vegan for a really long time, a couple of years, 6 years.
So I decided when I was about to turn 21.
Okay, so more than 6 years.
I'm going to give myself until my 21st birthday. And then after my 21st birthday, I'll be vegan, which is such a weird thing to think about.
So interesting.
I was like, this is going to be my birthday treat, not harming animals anymore. Well, I don't know. It was some weird thought that I had in my mind. So I'm almost 28 now. So I've been vegan for 7 years, and for a few reasons. I guess the first reason was for the animals. To be fair. I grew up on a farm and we had cows and sheep and chickens, and I grew up eating everything, every type of animal product, whatever. But it seems so natural to see the chicken and then, you know, you raise the chickens and then you eat the chickens, right? And you go out and find the eggs and then you eat the eggs. Like, so that makes a lot of sense. But then when I moved into the city, and there was just such a disconnection of the food that we're eating and where it's coming from. Like, when I was growing up, I knew where my eggs were coming from. I knew that the eggs were coming from the chickens who ate our food scraps, and they ran around the house and they ate grass, and they had a really good life. So the eggs, you know, I felt like it was okay. And, like, they would just lay eggs everywhere and they'll just forget about their eggs. So, like, chickens are really dumb. They don't really remember what they've done with their eggs. So it's not like they were losing out on eggs either, right? So,
that's like, such a good fun fact.
You know? I was like, oh, this is fine. I'm eating an egg and they don't want it anyway, so I'll just eat it. But, moving into the city and thinking about the food from the supermarket, where is it coming from? I have no idea. It's coming from the farm. And when you look at, like, mass production of animal products, it's not good. It's really horrible. Like, obviously, what initially got made me change my eating habits was for the animal rights sort of thing. I don't think that animals should be raised for the purpose of killing, especially the conditions that they are raised in at the moment. But there's also the environmental aspect as well. Like, there's so much deforestation going just to put cattle on there for grazing. And there's just, you know, all the science about the methane from cows. And when you think about the price of the meat, isn't just about the meat. It's about how much water did the cow use, and how much food, how much, like, grains and vegetables has gone to the cow, could have gone to a poor child that needs food, or, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, why would we give our food to cows so that we could kill them when we could give food to other people, or give food, or just not cut down as much trees, leave the trees alone, and, like, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally see it. There's such a...
It just doesn't make sense to me. So there was the whole, like, environmental side to it as well. Yeah.
There's such a flow-on effect that carries through so many different aspects and different levels and different things to think about and consider. And I hear that, and I feel it so deeply, because I guess from my perspective, I'm not against the consumption of animals, but I feel like as a society we over consume on animal products, and it's not in an intentional or conscious manner. Like, there's an endless supply because there's an endless demand. And I think if we shifted that demand a little bit, then they could reduce the yeah. supply or the demand on that supply. And we could start to see improvements at least, like moving in the right direction. Mm. And yeah, there's just been such a huge agricultural yeah. push and everything is accessible yeah. at all periods of time. And, you know, I'm going to butcher this because I can't remember it exactly, but of one animal product, we like export more than we consume on our own soil, which is yeah. just insane. Like a lot of the production that we have is for export, and I get that's part of the economy of the world, but yeah, it doesn't seem like anyone is self resourceful, like managing themselves. There's too much interaction.
Yeah. And like, I'm not against animal consumption either. Like I think a lot of people, there's so many people who need animal products to be healthy, and I could probably be healthy with animal products, but it's a sacrifice that I'm okay with. Like I'm okay not eating animals. And if I cannot eat animals and help reduce our global carbon footprint, then I'm happy to do it. Like it's a no brainer for me. But if there's someone out there who, you know, starts to feel sick if they don't have animal products, then those are the people that should be eating it. Like, yeah. But the other thing that you said as well is that people have animal products for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and that so much. It's overloading on animal products. Yeah, I don't like, you would obviously know a lot more about the nutrition side of things, but maybe once or twice a week eating meat is enough, right?
It's
all the time. So in our culture and so in our habit I'm gonna have a like chicken sandwich or whatever.
We're not very creative with seeking out other protein sources, or like I guess we've been withheld a certain level of understanding around, oh, you can get protein from a bunch of other different things. Like it's not the only source. And I think if you look back historically in the way that we obtained food, like, you know, this is going back in like the hunter sort of hunter-gatherer days, but you wouldn't hunt a piece of meat every single day and then eat that piece of meat multiple times a day. Like you'd hunt and then you'd have that last for a while and you'd eat every bit of the animal and you'd be quite resourceful with it. And then you'd hunt again. And I think that's where we've kind of become the hunters and we've stopped being the gatherers. Like we haven't looked at plants as being an important part of our diet and needing to have that be the foundation, I suppose. So, I mean, personally, I haven't had any animal meat or any animal products since Sunday. And like that's just because I personally feel better when I don't eat animal meats, but I also don't avoid it. Like I'm in a sticky situation because I can't have a high amount of carbs either. And on a vegan vegetarian diet, like the basis of that is really grains and legumes and things like that, which provide in a healthy ratio of proteins and carbohydrates. So I'll get in a sticky situation every now and then, or I'll go out and I'll feel like I have to order something with meat and veggies just to keep it really simple and healthy for me. But yeah, I think back to that original point, a couple of times a week, more than enough. And, you know, a few different types, some fish, maybe a red meat, maybe a white meat of some kind, but it definitely doesn't have to be a breakfast, lunch and dinner scenario.
Yeah.
Not at all. And like, do you feel good on a vegan diet? Like, do you feel like your body really is rewarded by that?
Yeah, like, I mean, I think there was like the first couple weeks of going vegan and my body was like, because I did it really bad. Like I didn't see the scriptures or anything. I was just like, I'm going to not eat meat after this. So I just pretty much just had my normal meals but without the meat. And then like, it's just a dumb way to do it. So don't do the way I did it. And my body was just like, what the hell is going on? Like I had a bit of a freak out at the start. So I felt, obviously because I wasn't replacing the proteins and stuff, I felt really sore and horrible for the first couple weeks. But then after that, like, I feel great. Like I feel lighter. It sounds really weird. I don't know if this is just in my mind, but I feel a lot happier.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like I don't feel angry anymore.
Which is, no, that's like a legit thing. Like If you eat foods that, yeah, legit. I think even in like Ayurvedic more than anything.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what they say in Ayurveda, right? Because if the animal's suffering, then you eat that suffering or something, and that suffering gets absorbed into you or something.
Mm.
I was like, oh, probably why.
Yeah. Or if it's just not compatible with your body, then you're putting something in that isn't fueling it right, that isn't nourishing it. Then you're getting like, you know, messages of like, I guess, signaling to that, saying like, hey, I'm not very happy with this. So I think there is something, some merit to that sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a pretty good sound knowledge of it now. And after 6 or 7 years, you've got that comprehension of how to do it properly.
Experimenting and doing my own research, and obviously like seeing you helped me like think about different ways to eat and things like that. So it's just like reteaching yourself how to eat, really, because most of, or I guess all people grow up with an omnivorous diet, so that's just what we're used to. And then when you take out the animal products, you just have to learn what to replace them with. That it's so easy. It's just, it's so easy to be vegan. Like everyone is like, oh, is it hard? Like, do you miss cheese? I'm like, not really. Like, there's so many other alternatives that you can,
I love how everyone always goes to cheese. Like, do you miss cheese?
Yeah, I was never a very cheese person either. Like, it was nice, but it wasn't something that I'd like want to kill an animal for, you know?
Yeah. Where do you sit though on that line of, I guess, animal products and then animal byproducts? Like, I guess from a psychological perspective, because I know they're not part of it here or there with vegan, but well, do you think there is a distinction there?
Like, not really, because, so do you mean like eggs and dairy as a byproduct?
And honey as an example.
So for example, eggs only come from a female chicken. So what happens to the males? They get, so the moment they're born, if they are born male, they either get gassed or chucked in a blender. So I don't see it as a difference. Like having an egg just because the chicken didn't die, there was still so much death behind it, right? Gassing a baby chicken is more humane than a blender. So apparently gassing them is more common, or sometimes they drown them.
People are sick.
Yeah.
I did not even know that was a thing. So obviously this is where people are farming chickens.
Like obviously there's going to be some farms that wouldn't do that. But at the same time, there's no value in having just as male chickens than female. So what are they going to do with the male chickens? I don't know, but they probably won't want them alive because they require more resources to feed them and all of that. So
True. I didn't even think about
that. Same with dairy. The female cow, like you can only get milk from a female cow. That's pregnant. So the cow is constantly pregnant, constantly giving birth to a cow, and then the next cow. And if the baby cow is born male, then what?
Short life.
Like you can't be a dairy cow, so what's going to happen? It'll probably turn to veal, or if it has a good mix of genetics, it's going to be, maybe it can have a life of donating sperm. But so even though it's a byproduct and the animal isn't dying, there's so much death behind it, so I don't really see the difference.
No, that's a very valuable point. And I think it's something that even I neglected to be aware of or even know. And like I don't have dairy products. I mean, I occasionally have cheese, but I don't really have dairy products, or I don't eat eggs just because I'm intolerant to them. So I guess it hasn't really crossed my mind in that way. But
yeah,
it's so easy to become narrow-minded on it. And you're like, oh, yeah, but they're not, like, whatever. Like, yeah, no, that point about the cow, I'm like, fuck, yeah, that's actually so true. Like how terrible is that to, like, take that source away from a mother and to have them constantly in that state? It's actually quite damaging. It's not good.
I avoid talking about veganism to people because I don't know. I don't want people to feel like they're a shit human because they eat animals, because that's not true. It's like that either. Like, I don't think that people are horrible for eating animals. It's just it's the reality of what needs to happen to produce the amount of animal products that we as humans want to consume.
That is the problem. It's the consumption and the production.
Yeah. And I really try to avoid talking to people about veganism because I'm like, it's going to cause so much pushback. And I don't want to be
but
like,
sometimes
that horrible vegan who just like, you know, there's so many horrible vegans out there. So
you're definitely not one of them at all. And I think your perspective on it was very helpful and, you know, enlightening more than anything.
Want to change the way they're doing something, you can't go at it from a place of, like, judgment. You have to go at it from a place of understanding and compassion, right? So, And same with feminism and equality. You can't shit on men because that's not going to do anything. You have to you have to educate
lift up the other.
Otherwise,
I completely agree.
It's
counterproductive. It doesn't really get you where you want to be if that's your approach to it. But I think it's important to have conversations around that, and you never know, someone could be listening that's like hasn't thought about something through that lens, and maybe it causes them to have meat-free Monday or, you know, whatever the thing is for that person. And I think it is those baby steps that need to be encouraged and just awareness and tuning into what feels good for your body. You know, that's a big philosophy of mine. Like, and this comes back to our earlier conversation around movement, what feels good for you in your movement practice, like almost allowing yourself to question things, because oftentimes we follow suit because we've seen it done. We've been told that's how we do it, whether it's in our movement practices, our careers, our eating habits, our lifestyles. We just see a formula and we insert ourselves into that and follow suit. And I think it's important to have these conversations so that people can question it, so they can become curious, so they can think for themselves and make their own decisions really about what they want to do and what works for them.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with that perspective as well.
Yeah, it's everything, you know, and that's why I've loved, you know, being exposed to your practice and your mindset around movement and I guess being privy to that experience. And the beautiful thing about the world as it is today is that even though there is a lot of shit stuff going on, anyone listening can jump on in and book a class and join you and experience you and all of your magnificence in this digital world, which is awesome. And I would encourage anyone to do that because it is mellow stretch is my favorite thing. And I haven't done it for a while. And I kick myself every time because me and Jason got in such a good routine with it. Like every Friday had nowhere to be. So like, let's stretch out the week. And it was so good. So we need to get back onto that bandwagon. But it's been awesome. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience through movement and your take on that, your perspective on it, and just having really open and honest conversation today. I've really, really appreciated it.
Oh, thank you for having me. And yeah, I hope this conversation helps someone in some way. Thanks for listening to all my rambling thoughts.
I love it. I love all your rambling thoughts. They're the best. It's been awesome. And I will link to your Instagram and your website so people can find you and can join in on a class as well. And I hope
you do. Love to, teach a class and meet some people on there. Yay.
Thanks so much, Hannah. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. I hope you got something magical out of this episode today. If you want to keep the conversation flowing, head over to the gram. You can find me at annalise.madrell or stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes at Coming From Experience, all one word. Be sure to share this podcast with a special someone who you think might gain a lot out of this conversation, and be sure to leave a review and let me know what you think. Until next time.